This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. As a cultural advisor in Afghanistan in 2010 and 11, Carol Burke regularly ventured beyond the safety of the base to talk with Afghans. In the months leading up to her deployment, she frequently dreamed of being killed. She'd been in war zones before as a journalist, but somehow the danger felt different this time. It was then that Carol decided to do what soldiers have been doing for millennia, writing a death letter, a message for her loved ones should she not make it back. The experience moved her to explore the private and painful death letter tradition throughout history and conflicts. Her article, To Be Read in the Event of My Death, is online at Narratively. And Carol Burke, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So the death letter tradition is as old as war. Is it something that soldiers are encouraged to do or prepared to do in getting ready for deployments?
They are, and as a matter of fact, some units, a commander or sergeant in charge will actually require all of his soldiers to write these. And in the past, it went along with making sure that you had a will, that everything was taken care of as you headed off into harm's way.
And so does everybody follow the directions and write them?
No, and some units don't. And many individuals deploying choose not to. I interviewed a couple of former Special Forces soldiers, and one of the things they admitted is they said, look, we're these high-speed guys, and since so many people are wounded and sent home, and the survivability is so much greater than it was in previous wars. And he was a little sheepish when he said this. And he said, we don't want somebody going through our pockets and finding this mushy letter.
Oh, wow.
So there is some sense of, even in death, assuming the lean, mean fighting machine image.
Well, you point to the resistance that some people have to talking about them or to writing them. Is there something superstitious there?
There can be. Some soldiers report that this tradition that has a little bit of magic associated with it, like a lot of the things that soldiers carry into war with them, if you talk about it too much, the magic will dissipate. And the idea is, in many ways, I think it's kind of prophylactic. Mm-hmm. You do this ritual of writing this letter before you head off, and then in a way you bracket all of that and leave it behind, and you can concentrate fully on the challenges that are ahead of you.
Now, Carol, you didn't tell your husband or family about these premonitions, these death dreams that you had. Did you tell them about the letters that you wrote to them?
When I left, I left three letters in a metal box that we have with important documents. And I just said to my husband, I left these letters in case I don't return. That's all I said.
What did you write in the letters?
I basically thanked all the people I cared about for making my life a full life. I encouraged them as soon as they could to transform loss and sorrow into an active life, getting on with life without me. And then I did it turns out I didn't realize at the time what a lot of these letters do, which is the kind of look back over one shoulder from another dimension, saying things like, if it is possible to look back, know that I will be watching you with pleasure and love and concern and that kind of farewell.
Did it help you to write that? Did it make you feel better, more protected in any way?
Well, what it did, interestingly, and I've been thinking a lot about this, is that, first of all, I didn't realize this would happen, but I never had another dream about my own death after writing these letters.
Well, that's fascinating.
Never. And it was, in a way, kind of a magic ritual. And it also pulled together some threads so that I could go on and know that I had left a fond goodbye for the people I care about.
You dug up several examples throughout history of these death letters, one from the Civil War, just days before the first Battle of Bull Run. Now, what got to you about this one in particular?
Well, I think that it was the soldier actually, or the officer in this case, actually contemplating what was probably likely to happen or imminent. And in a sense, once you finish a letter, you put some kind of boundary on all of that fraught emotion.
Let's hear that letter. This is from Major Sullivan Ballou, and this reading is from Ken Burns' documentary, The Civil War.
I know how American civilization now leans upon the triumph of the government, and how great a debt we owe to those who went before us through the blood and suffering of the Revolution. And I am willing, perfectly willing, to lay down all my joys in this life to help maintain this government and to pay that debt. Sarah, my love for you is deathless. It seems to bind me with mighty cables that nothing but omnipotence can break. And yet my love of country comes over me like a strong wind and bears me irresistibly with all those chains to the battlefield. The memory of all the blissful moments I've enjoyed with you come crowding over me, and I feel most deeply grateful to God and you that I've enjoyed them for so long. And how hard it is for me to give them up and burn to ashes the hopes of future years, when, God willing, we might still have lived and loved together and see our boys grown up to honorable manhood around us. If I do not return, my dear Sarah, never forget how much I loved you, nor that when my last breath escapes me on the battlefield, it will whisper your name. Forgive my many faults and the many pains I have caused you. How thoughtless, how foolish I have sometimes been. But, oh, Sarah, if the dead can come back to this earth and flit unseen around those they love, I shall always be with you in the brightest day and the darkest night. Always. Always. And when the soft breeze fans your cheek, it shall be my breath, or the cool air, your throbbing temple, it shall be my spirit passing by. Sarah, do not mourn me dead. Think I am gone, and wait for me, for we shall meet again.
We're speaking with Carol Burke, who's been a journalist in several war zones and has also served as a cultural advisor in Afghanistan in 2010 and 2011. It was in preparing for that deployment that she did what soldiers have been doing for millennia. She wrote a death letter to be opened in the event of her death, and she wrote about the experience for Narratively. You also found a death letter in the form of a blog post by someone who called himself Jikar, or Major Andy Olmsted in real life. Now, this was to be uploaded in the event of his death. What did you read in that letter that hit you?
This officer had written many blogs while deployed and was commenting on his experiences in Iraq. He was writing those really for a community of readers who read the blog and for other bloggers. So he wants to leave them a permanent record. But interestingly, what happened with his blog is that one of his fellow bloggers, not a family member, who got to know him well just through the process of blogging, she promised to upload it for him. And that blog was read by a much, much larger audience, and it's very moving. He's very articulate. And he does what a lot of bloggers do, which is, in a way, caution against extraordinary sorrow. And as a matter of fact, some of these letters that soldiers write are very funny. Some of them are, well, I don't have much money left, and I have a little bit in this insurance that I have, and I don't want you all to sit around moaning my death. I want you to buy, you know, get all the booze you want to, have a great party, celebrate. And so there is that tradition as well, kind of flying in the face of death. And that, too, I think, is a pretty protective gesture.
Well, here's an example of one such letter that was cited in your article. This is from Major Andy Olmsted. He was serving in Iraq when he wrote this letter as a web post to be published in the event of his death. And he was killed by insurgents in 2008.
What I don't want this to be is a chance for me or anyone else to be maudlin. I'm dead. That sucks, at least for me and my family and friends. But all the tears in the world aren't going to bring me back, so I'd prefer that people just remember the good things about me rather than mourning my loss. If it turns out a specific number of tears will in fact bring me back to life, then by all means, break out the onions.
Of course, those who are writing these or constructing these letters use the medium of the time. And during World War II, they sometimes appeared in newspapers. And now I will warn you, if you want to have a good cry, the video dedications to those killed in combat, you know, often with letters read by wives and friends and parents and loved ones of soldiers, are just absolutely heartbreaking. So what are these? What's the purpose these are going to serve? They're going to go far beyond the family circle out into the wider public.
Yes, and I think that also soldiers often during deployment produce not their own letters, but their own DVDs. They have video cameras on their cell phones. Often family find these farewell videos on a laptop that's returned. And often those are very personal and meant for family members, but a family member paying tribute to the loss of this person will upload them to Facebook or YouTube. And so they are having wider currency. And I think that in the next 5 years, we're going to see a lot more of these uploaded.
You, Carol, did leave Afghanistan safely and intact. What did you do with your death letter? And do you know what soldiers, Marines, fighting forces traditionally do with theirs?
A lot of them don't retain them. They've come back safely, so they dispose of them. Some just keep them hidden away. One soldier told me he was disabled, and it took him 5 years before he showed the letter to his wife. And he said that it had so much resonance and meaning for her that now he has a project in which he's trying to collect these letters from other soldiers. So I think that this is an effort to document what actually happens and to show the meaning that's involved in these rituals.
Well, Carol Burke, thank you for opening up what is normally quite a private ritual for people. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Carol Burke is professor at the University of California, Irvine, and author of Camp All-American, Hanoi Jane, and The High and Tight. She's currently writing a memoir about her experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan, and her article, To Be Read in the Event of My Death, is online at Narratively. There's a link at wordofmouthradio.org. And we want to mention terrific illustrations for the piece by artist and graphic novelist Julia Gaffer. She's a native of Concord, New Hampshire. Can you die of a broken heart? It's a phenomenon long observed among elderly spouses who die within months or even days of each other. And it turns out there's a medical reason for it. Why broken hearts kill, when word of mouth continues.